Chapter 10. Like a pack of hyenas fighting over a freshly killed zebra, the president's security advisors were biting and yipping at each other in a self-serving attempt to dodge responsibility over the events in Japan. Tempers flared across the cabinet room, situated in the west wing of the White House. "It's a breakdown of intelligence, clear and simple. Our consulates are not getting the intelligence support they need, and two of my people are dead as a result," the Secretary of State complained harshly. "We had no advance knowledge of an increase in terrorist activity in Japan. Diplomatic feeds from State reported the Japanese security forces were in the dark as well," the deputy CIA director fired back. "Gentlemen, what's done is done," the president interjected as he attempted to light a large old-fashioned smoking pipe. Bearing the physical appearance of Teddy Roosevelt and the no-nonsense demeanor of Harry Truman, President Garner Ward was widely admired by the public for his common sense and pragmatic style. The first-term president from Montana welcomed spirited debate among his staff and cabinet, but had a low tolerance for finger-pointing and self-serving pontification. "We need to understand the nature of the threat and the motives of our opponent, and then calculate a course of action," the president said simply. "I'd also like a recommendation as to whether Homeland Security should issue an elevated domestic security alert." He nodded towards Dennis Jimenez, sitting across the cabinet room conference table, who served as Secretary of the Homeland Security Department. "But first, we need to figure out who these characters are." "Martin, why don't you fill us in on what we know so far?" the president said, addressing FBI Director Martin Finch. An ex-Marine Corps MP, Finch still sported a crew cut and spoke with the blunt voice of a basic training drill sergeant. "Sir, the assassinations of Ambassador Hamilton and Deputy Chief of Mission Bridges appear to have been performed by the same individual. Surveillance video from the hotel where Bridges was killed exposed a suspect dressed as a waiter who was not known to be an employee of the hotel. Photographs from the video were matched to eyewitness accounts of an individual seen at the Tokyo area golf course shortly before Ambassador Hamilton was shot. Any tie-in to the killing of the executive Chris Gavin and the Semcon plant explosion?" the president inquired. "None that we have been able to identify, although there is a potential indicator in the note left with Bridges' body. We are, of course, treating it as a related incident." "And what of the suspect?" the Secretary of State asked. "The Japanese authorities have been unable to make a match in their known criminal files or provide a possible identification for that matter. He was not a previously recognized member of the Japanese Red Army cell. He is apparently something of an unknown. The Japanese law enforcement agencies are cooperating fully in the manhunt and have placed their immigration checkpoints on high alert. Despite no prior connection, there would seem to be little doubt that he is operating under the auspices of the Japanese Red Army," the CIA deputy added. "The note left with Bridges. What did it say?" asked Jimenez. Finch rifled through a folder, then pulled out a typewritten sheet. "Translated from Japanese, it says, 'Be vanquished, American imperialists, who soil Nippon with greed, or death will blow her cold, sweet breath to the shores of America. J.R.A. Classic fringe cult hyperbole. "What is the state of the Japanese Red Army?" "I thought they were essentially dissolved a number of years ago," President Ward asked. Waiting for the reply, he tilted his head back and blew a cloud of cherry-scented tobacco smoke towards the paneled ceiling before Finch answered. "As you may know, the Japanese Red Army is a fringe terrorist group that grew out of a number of communist factions in Japan during the 1970s. They promote an anti-imperialist rant and have supported the overthrow of the Japanese government and monarchy by both legitimate and illegitimate means. With suspected ties to the Middle East and North Korea, the JRA was behind a number of bombings and hijackings, culminating in the attempted takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Kuala Lumpur in 1975. They seemed to lose support in the 1990s, and by 2000, the known leadership of the organization had been largely apprehended. Though many believed the organization was dead, indications of the group's stirrings have been seen again in the last 2 years. Published doctrines and active media reporting in Japan have provided a new sounding board, gaining more reception in the country's declining economic climate. Their message has focused on anti-American and anti-capitalist tenets, rather than the anarchistic overthrow of the government, which has found a degree of support within a fragment of the population's youth. Oddly, there is no visible frontman or poster child for the group. I can endorse Marty's comments, Mr. President, the deputy CIA director offered. Until the hits on our people, we've had no overt record of activity from these people in a number of years. The known leadership is behind bars. Quite frankly, we don't know who is now calling the shots. Are we confident there is no Al-Qaeda connection here? Possible, but not likely, Finch replied. The method of assassination is certainly not their style, and there has been no real radical Islamic presence visible in Japan. At this juncture, we have absolutely no evidence to suggest a link. Where are we with the Japanese on this? The president asked. We have an FBI counter-terrorist team in-country working closely with the Japanese National Police Agency. The Japanese authorities are quite cognizant of the nefarious nature of these assassinations in their country and have assigned a large task force to the investigation. There is little more in the way of assistance we could ask of them that they haven't already offered up. I have initiated a request through state to the Japanese Foreign Ministry for an update to their profile of high-risk aliens, Jimenez interjected. We'll issue a border security alert watch in coordination with the FBI. And what are we doing elsewhere abroad to prevent any more target shooting? The president asked, addressing the Secretary of State. We have issued heightened security alerts at all of our embassies, the secretary replied. We have also assigned additional security protection to our senior diplomats and placed a temporary travel restriction for all State Department personnel within their host country. For the time being, our ambassadors abroad are under lock and key. Any opinion that there is an imminent threat domestically, Dennis? Not at this time, Mr. President, the Homeland Security Director replied. We've tightened our travel and immigration inspections on incoming traffic from Japan, but don't feel it is necessary to raise the domestic security alert. Do you concur, Marty? Yes, sir. Like Dennis, all our indications suggest that the incidents are isolated to Japan. Very well. Now, what about the deaths of those two Coast Guard meteorologists in Alaska? The president asked, drawing another puff on his pipe. Finch rifled through some documents before responding. That would be the island of Unaska in the Aleutians. We have an investigative team presently on site working with local officials. They are also looking at the destruction of a Numa helicopter as a related incident. Preliminary indications are that the acts were the result of rogue poachers who used cyanide gas to subdue a herd of sea lions. We're trying to track down a Russian fishing trawler that was known to be fishing the local waters illegally. Officials on site appear confident that they will apprehend the vessel. Cyanide gas to hunt sea lions? There are lunatics all over this planet. All right, gentlemen, let's give it our all to find these murderers. Allowing our diplomatic representatives to be gunned down without repercussion is not the message I want to be giving the world. I knew Hamilton and Bridges. They were both good men. We'll find them, Finch promised. Make sure, the president said, tapping his downturned pipe bowl against a stainless steel ashtray for effect. I fear these characters have more up their sleeve than we realize, and I want none of what they're selling. As he spoke, a glob of burnt tobacco plopped unceremoniously into the ashtray, and nobody said a word.